Hello, and welcome to another episode of Lucid Cafe. I'm your host, Wendy Halley. Well, my guest, Terry O'Connor, is a force. She's also my sister-in-law. When you meet Terry, you quickly discover how passionate and dedicated she is to the things in life that are important to her. Family, friends, yoga, teaching yoga on the beach, the Jersey Shore, and of course, Bruce Springsteen, which she doesn't mention in her conversation with me, but I thought I'd mention it because she could be his biggest fan. In today's conversation, we focus on Terry's unlikely journey to becoming a yoga teacher and the evolution of her wildly successful business, New Jersey Beach Yoga. As you'll soon discover, Terry loves what she does, and she loves to work with what she calls reluctant yogis. Just to give you an idea, so it's not a stretch to consider someone like Bruce Springsteen a reluctant yogi, right? I think we can all get behind that assumption. Well, Terry got a chance to meet Bruce at an event and actually got him to strike a yoga pose with her for a photo. Just saying. Please enjoy my conversation with my sister by marriage, Terry Halley O'Connor. Hi, Terry. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it because I know you're super busy.
Well, I like to bring New Jersey to the podcast.
And the podcast world is thankful to you for that. So I have been wanting to chat with you for a while because I've been annoying and asking you incessantly if you'll come on my podcast, and you've been very gracious.
I'm honored. I've been listening to your podcast, and they hold my attention span, so that's a good thing.
Oh, great. That's good feedback. I think you have a really interesting story of personal evolution that I would love to learn more about. And I think it would be very inspirational for others.
Oh, well, thank you. I think we're all on an interesting path.
Would you ever have guessed that you would have ended up where you are in your life?
No. I probably shock myself every day that I get up and I get to call myself a yoga teacher. I feel like that is where my passion for reluctant yogis and people who have trouble sitting still has driven the way I teach, because I was that nervous person that never saw myself focusing for a long period of time, teaching a group of people about relaxation. It's almost like laughable that that would be me. And here I am, you know, 15 years later, actually doing it. Still surprises me every day.
So how did you get into it?
By accident. After 20 years of working as a dental hygienist, which suited my nature at the time, but only fed into my very anal retentive, Zoom focused, micro kind of attention span, I had life happened and some shifts happened in life. And I was taking yoga just to stretch my neck so I didn't have bad posture, but I would want to leave before any relaxation or breathing. I really was only in for it for the stretching. And at the point in the practice where you lay down and relax, which is really the most important part of the entire practice, I would want to leave. Sometimes when I would take yoga at a gym, I would leave and put my sneakers on there thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're just laying around. This is so stupid. Why do they make you lay here? And my mind would be racing like crazy. And now the transformation, hopping ahead, is that now when I get to take a class as a student, I want to hide the little bells they ring and stay in Shavasana forever, because I've been comfortable with stillness now. And it's really quite a miracle.
So how did you get from restless mind to, yeah, I want to do meditation?
After practicing in a small little cubbyhole of a room as a dental hygienist, and I loved it while I was doing it, but I tend to go all, from 0 to 100, go all the way in, and I've recognized now that that creates burnout, you know, overkill. In college, I was queen hygiene. If I was going to do dental hygiene, nobody was leaving there with a speck of plaque, and if I was going to do it, I was going to be the manager, and all out to burnout. instead of even moderation in your career. So when it started, I had a change in the office I was working at, and I just decided, like, I can't do this anymore. I'm feeling claustrophobic in this small windowless room. And I thought, I had been training at a gym with a personal trainer. I had had a sample of that, and I thought, well, I could do that. That's healthcare, and I like training. And so I went back to school for personal training. I got my certifications through American Council on Exercise. And at that time, of course, I couldn't get one certification. I had to get a bunch of certifications so I could get the best certification. And I started practicing that with clients, and they needed a sub at the gym to teach yoga. And I thought, well, I don't do that. And somebody had told me if I took a weekend class that I would be able to sub at the gym. So in I went for a weekend class at Certification Atlantic City, 2 days, you know, maybe I had to know 8 muscles. And I came back and I subbed a class at the gym. And I was so nervous. I had cue cards taped all over. I kept putting people in child's pose so I could read my cue cards and follow in line. And it was probably frustrating, the most least go with the flow example of a yoga teacher that you could have. And one of the people in class said, wow, you really helped my attention span. And I thought, well, wow, that's great because I don't have one. I'm teaching you yoga. And they thought it was pretty cool that I could do that. So it was interesting. And I needed continuing ed for my personal training certification. And I found that there was yoga training where you got continuing ed. And I thought, well, let me check this out a little bit more. And at the time, my dad had passed. And it was a very traumatic time in my life. And most people that have been teaching for a long time can tell you, a lot of yoga teachers, it was actually a trauma in their life that opened them up to experience yoga on a different level. And at that time, my therapist even suggested that I really work with the breathing techniques that yoga provided. And it was very healing for me. And I started embracing the idea of just paying attention to my breath. And I felt the benefits of that. And I was busy at the time. My kids were all home and busy. And the breathing was my anchor to the present moment. And I had to stay in the present moment so I didn't backtrack. And then I started to decide that yoga was a place that I could see myself not just reaching other people who were reluctant, but I could deepen my relationship with myself and figure out a way to find balance in my life and maybe explore something that seemed very unnatural to me to fill that missing piece of me, that I didn't have to be stuck in the label of not athletic, not, you know, just do dental hygiene or just do this. And maybe there was a possibility of being calm. So that's how it kind of wove its way in, all by kind of accident of being asked to sub at the gym.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So when you started exploring meditation and breathing, I don't know if you can put words to this, but what kinds of things did you start to notice when you would turn your focus inward?
First, I noticed how hard it was. And so I started listening to tapes. I listened to Thich Nhat Hanh. It was on a cassette tape at the time. Still love the old cassette tapes and CDs. And so I would listen with someone else because I had trouble staying there by myself. And I met another yoga teacher after I started taking courses now to become certified, my first 200-hour certification for yoga. And that was a part of it. But the first style of yoga that I was training in was more of a flowing physical practice with some breathing, which was perfect to me because it was more baby steps. So I could find myself with the teachers that I was fortunate enough to have to coach me back to the present moment when we meditated as a group, or they guided me. And then I would practice that at home, but it didn't last that long. It was always more helpful to have other people, like a coach with me, therapist, teacher, whatever, that tape, whatever I needed. And eventually it just started to grow. And some days, even now, it's easier than others. I find being in nature, it's a lot easier for me. If I'm at the beach, my mind shuts off. It's harder inside. You know, you kind of have to find your place. There's no one place or one style of meditation, and you don't ever get it. You could sit there, you know, like the Dalai Lama one day, and the next day you're fidgeting all over the place. It's just where you're at.
So what do you do when you bump up against those moments when you just can't settle?
I move my body. I get up and I remove myself from the monkey mind. Sometimes you have to get out of ruminating in your thoughts and just create your, just get out, get outside, put on a song, do something different. Don't get stuck. I think getting stuck would probably be my biggest fear in life, being stagnant, not being fluid. That's probably why I relate to water so much. noticing your thoughts and noticing they're there, that's meditation too. It's just you let them go again. And that was really good for me because being very goal-oriented, I thought you're good at it, you're bad at it. And that's not true at all. If you have awareness, you're great at it. And sometimes there can be 100 thoughts. And I usually tell the people that I teach on the beach that when you're lying on the beach, there's a lot of planes that go by with banners that advertise. Sometimes a lot of planes go by and they're really noisy when they get close, but then you watch them go away and there's a period of time when there's just sky and it's like, then another plane comes by. And the closer it gets, the noisier it gets, but then you watch it drift away. So you can do that with your thoughts too. And that's how I practice for myself.
That's a really cool analogy. So getting back to your career path, you get invited to teach at the gym.
Yes.
And then where does it go from there? I mean, because let me just let the listeners know that you have a yoga empire on the Jersey Shore.
Not really, but thank you.
My words.
What happened is just like is my nature. If I'm going to do it, I want to really do it and immerse myself into whatever I tend to get into. Some people think it's like a theming disease, whether it's a costume party or it's just jump in 100%. So I started with my first training in my 200 hours and dove into that and finished that in a year and a half and traveled all over and had the opportunity through this training company to work with the company for a while, to travel to India after having never really left the country before. That was terrifying. So getting comfortable with doing things that scared me was a big part of my path that I got from taking my yoga teacher training. The friends I made within the yoga community were very different from a lot of the people that were in my life as a mom and as a dental hygienist and as somebody involved in the community. And for a while, it was a struggle. How do I blend all these pieces of me together instead of just turn into yogi? I still have these other parts of me. So you find a way to decide how you're going to slice up your pie of who you are without letting my drive to just drown in yoga for a while take over. That was the hard part. So when I finished my first training, I started teaching, I was doing private client training, and then I was incorporating yoga into it, kind of sneaking it in for the clients that don't like yoga the way it was snuck in for me. And that seemed to really work well. And then I had an opportunity with the city of Sea Isle. They didn't have a yoga program here to teach on the beach because I had been doing some community education classes locally in the township where we lived. And some people really liked it. And I said, well, if I start teaching over in Sea Isle, would you come over there? And I said, sure. And then it grew from there because I'm really fortunate to work as an independent contractor with the city of Sea Isle, which really wanted to expand their fitness and health and wellness within the city as a vacation community, not just the bar scene.
Well, what's interesting about what you've gone through, it sounds like opportunities kind of came your way. It wasn't like you had this vision of yourself, seeing yourself with hundreds of people on the beach doing yoga.
Oh, no. There was no vision board. There was no manifestation. There's still, and I'm not kidding, when one person walks into class, I'm thrilled. I don't care how many people are there. I'm so honored to be able to share this with people because I know how hard it is to show up. I know what it's like to be the insecure person thinking everybody's better at it than you. A lot of people think yoga teachers are, you had to be in gymnastics, or I bet you were really athletic as a kid. And I was not. This is all I joke, that I have adult onset athleticism. This is later in the game. And it's just exciting to think that these opportunities came up and I was surprised, but I think I was open to them. I think we all have opportunities in front, but when you believe that you could do it or you could try it, not even do it, believe that you could try and it's okay if you fail, that's how they keep coming. Or I'd have a kooky idea and I would bring it up to the people at the recreation department and they'd say, sure, give it a try. And then it would work. It was like, wow, like my full moon yoga that I do. I was at a meeting and I said, wouldn't it be cool if we ordered a free community event in the summertime where people could practice beach yoga the night of the full moon? It would be free to encourage reluctant yogis. We could promote it as a community event. And it's grown into this huge event, which is so cool. But that was just a discussion that came into reality.
Beautiful. And so the beach yoga phenomenon, it started out really small and then just kind of grew. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I started out with the first year, my youngest daughter, Kelly, she was very young. She stood on the boardwalk. I had a little sign, and she handed out free pens to people and brochures as they walked by. And at the time, there hadn't been beach replenishment, so you could see people on the beach practicing yoga as you walk the boardwalk. And that was a really big advertiser. Oh, what's going on over there? Now it's changed, and the dunes are there, so now we've kind of relocated. I had to get a big flag to draw people up to the hill so they can see. But at that time, it just started out very grassroots. I made contacts, I put some flyers out, but I'm very fortunate in that the city promoted me a lot in their brochure of things to do when you're on vacation. And because I was volunteering and I had kids in the high school involved in different activities, I would donate my time for fundraisers. So that's a really key thing in business, is what you give back gives you free press, it gives you goodwill, and it balances things out for what you receive. So that's anybody looking to grow their business, I would highly encourage to partner with places that you can make donations of your time or class certificates, community events. I think that was a big part of it.
That's a great suggestion. I had the honor of attending one of your yoga beach classes. It was Labor Day, right?
Yes. Labor Day has always been a free class that I gave. Some people think that's crazy because it's well attended, but I feel like at the end of the summer, especially to people who come all summer long, it's a thank you to say thanks for coming all summer long. Showing up is the hardest pose. When people do that, I don't take that lightly. It's hard to get out of bed when you're on vacation, and even when you're not on vacation or you're going to work afterwards. So this free class began as a way called Pose for Peace. That was another thing I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we laid out class so we all look like a peace sign and we sent a wave of peace out as like a big, as part of our free class on Labor Day. And I remember saying that to my husband, who's the best support in the whole world. And he said, that'd be cool. And I said, how can we do that? And he just said, well, we could get a rope and we could draw it around. Somebody stand in the center. And so we figured out how to make the peace sign. And I brought it to the city and I had a picture of a peace sign. And I said, these are how the mats are going to go. We'll call it Pose for Peace. And the first one was right after Hurricane Sandy. So I thought, let's do a donation class. It's a free class, but you can put donations in a bucket to go towards people who are struggling post Hurricane Sandy. So that's how it started, as a fundraiser. And then a couple years after Sandy, my niece, who has epilepsy, her family would come down for Labor Day and they would come to the class. And I realized there aren't a lot of ribbons out there for epilepsy. There are for a lot of causes, and they're all worthy causes, but this was one that was personal and I was very close to her. And I thought, well, let's just do it and benefit the National Epilepsy Foundation. And it was so much more than raising money. It raised a lot of awareness. People came to class that weren't yogis, but they liked the idea of epilepsy being seen. My niece was there, my sister-in-law was there, they got to interact. So that's a big passion of mine, is being a connector. So I thought that those two connections and using yoga as a vehicle for that, not just for money, was really, really cool. Plus the peace sign looks pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I want to use one of your drone photos as my graphic for this episode, if you're cool with that.
It's super cool, yeah.
Yeah, well, there was something very... I've taken certainly quite a few yoga classes in my day, but there was something quite magical about being on the beach and doing yoga. Clearly the sound of the waves,
yes,
just deepens the practice. And also I think the grounding of the sand, of having your feet in the sand, mm-hmm. of course, and being outdoors, just a really powerful experience.
Class writes itself on the beach. I can go in with a plan, but what nature's really done for me is teach me how to go with the flow. You can come in with a plan, but you can't control the weather. You can't control the tides. And learning to adapt to that in the beginning, the first couple of years, it would freak me out if I thought like, oh no, what if it rains in the middle of class? And now it's, you get wet. it's not that big of a deal.
Yep.
It was in the shower. But that took several years for me to do that. So the class plans I make when I come out on a day when it's high tide are very different from what I teach in low tide, because the hard sand and the soft sand provide a different grounding for people when they're standing on the earth with balance challenges. Harder in the soft sand to do standing postures, super cozy when you're kneeling. The opposite goes true when you're on the harder sand. The tides, the wind, I found that it's just the languaging of using the ocean provides me with cues that make for a very beautiful yoga class. I didn't invent the word breezy. It's just a fact. But when you use it, it sounds really nice when you're moving your body. And it's been interesting, just simple ways, what we call something, the power of words are so strong. Is it a windy day or is it an ocean breeze? So I try to use the ocean breeze and choose the words that really are more positive and light-giving. The sun is a great thing too. Some days the sun is out, some days it's not. It's always there. So for people new to yoga, you know, there's all this swirly stuff, which is beautiful when I take classes with other people. I can't pull that stuff off. I don't know if it's because of my Jersey spirit.
What do you mean by swirly stuff?
Not swirly, but very...
So like new agey kind of...
And I love to take classes like that from people who authentically can deliver it. The Sanskrit language is beautiful. I cue some words in Sanskrit. I always say the English word, but I find that because my population is always mixed, I like to speak in a language that everybody can understand, and I'll throw the word in there. Some teachers can cue in a beautiful poetic way. They can read poems and it's very moving, but you have to find what's authentic to you. And in the beginning, when you learn to teach, you try to copy people who inspire you, but it doesn't always fit. You know, I can like somebody else's pants, but if they're not my size, it's not going to feel right. It's the same thing with what I choose to use. And over the years, it's been really cool to be able to find my own voice to use when I teach, with the cues that work for me that aren't the same as what I learned in my teacher training. And as far as like even swirly, that's really not the best word. I think it's more, what would you call it? Because you have more of that.
I have more of what? The thing, the swirliness?
The magicalness, the beauty, the languaging, the healing.
Huh. I wouldn't have put myself in that category. Huh. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a certain language, and it's different for everyone. But I think the key is, if the person owns it and it's true to who they are, it doesn't matter what's coming out. You want somebody to be real, not a poser. You know, we're stretching our bodies, but you want to be, the more relatable you are and comfortable you doing you, you give permission to other people for them to do them.
Absolutely. Yeah, the whole authenticity thing, it comes across. People have bullshit detectors and they can tell when someone is not being themselves versus when they are.
Yeah.
And that's what I noticed about your teaching style, is that it was you were very relatable and approachable, and you were bringing this sort of very ancient spiritual practice, bringing it firmly into kind of a mainstream.
Well, I think what it is it's taking the ancient practice, with all respect to the roots of yoga and all respect to all the gifts it has to offer, and making it relevant and accessible to people in today's world. And if you look at that, it's non-intimidating, it's non-judgmental, letting go of judgment or expectation or having to know something, having to even know the name of the poses. It's just having, I think it's that idea of coming in and just doing what you can. And your version of a lunge, whether you're on your knees or in extended legs, it's still a lunge. It's your lunge. It's not a comparison. And I never use the word advanced or beginner, because I feel like we're always a beginner every day. You wake up, your hormones are different. Your chemistry is different. Your distractions are different. How you feel based on, you know, is it a full moon, is different. So if you come to the mat, no matter how many years you practice, with a beginner's mind or any kind of class, it's very empowering because you have nowhere to go but grow. So I don't segment my class as advanced and beginner, just the same as the poses, because if you're in a lunge, it's just a different muscle group. If you're on your knees or extended, it's not better. And I love to give people the permission to believe that that's not better or worse. I have from 12 years old to 93-year-olds that can be sharing the same class at the same time. It's not about how you look, it's how you feel. And that's very empowering. And that's all I want to do, is get that message across.
Let me ask you this. In what ways do you think you've changed as a result of exploring yoga?
I like the word grow more than change, because I think at the root, there's still my nature. Like, everyone has a certain nature that they're wired with. And you can either feed into that and be too far one end, whether it's hyperactive or too laid back or whatever that is, or you can choose to do things that bring you into a sense of balance and harmony. So I know that my nature is, when anything comes up, to jump in and just overkill it. And I have learned through the practice of yoga that that's not necessary all the time. Or maybe at this point at 55, any of the time, that there's moderation. And moderation has always been my struggle. And I think yoga has taught me that moderation feels good. That you don't have to take, sometimes you can take a gentle class and never get up. And that's good. That's good for your mind. And to marry, let your mind live in the same house as your body is a really great thing, because I know that mine, they weren't roommates for a long time. So now they are most of the time. And that's a wonderful thing. So I think that's how I'm much more open-minded to more points of view. I don't feel like I have to fit in a certain definition of what maybe others have labeled me at, or I've been labeled, so I decided to just stay in that lane. I've tried to do that with my children too, to let them know that maybe you're good at sports and you do that a lot, but you're not just sports. You know, you might be all these other things too. And I think that's important for all of us. So that's what I think it's done for me, is take a step back and I can be more open to others because I'm more open to myself. A big saying I have is, you spot it, you got it. What you judge in others is you're believing that you're, you know, whatever you're missing in yourself. And that yoga really helps you just take a step back and see big picture.
Freud called that projection.
There you go.
Yeah, he was a freak, but he was right about defense mechanisms.
Yeah, and for some people, that's survivor for a while, and that's okay. But I think once you learn to let people be who they are and just appreciate them for who they are there and what's there to be offered, everybody doesn't have to fit the shoulds. Like, I think the shoulding yourself is toxic. We do it. I did it to myself for a long, long time. You can't even blame anybody from the outside. Oh, you should do this. You should do that. And I try really hard in my class to ban that word. You could drop an F-bomb, but don't you dare say should. I believe we store our shoulds in our shoulders. A very inspirational teacher of mine, Amy Stefanik, illustrated that in one of her classes that I took. She's been one of my yoga sheroes over the years, that when you start saying to yourself, I should do this, I should do that, all of a sudden your shoulders are creeping up into your earlobes like they're a pair of earrings. And there's all this tension in your traps, and you're trapping tension in your neck and in your jaw. And it's like your backpack of shoulds. I should do this. It gets heavier and heavier. So the physical body is just amazing how it reveals, without even knowing somebody, you can kind of tell, oh, wow, they really put a lot of pressure and should themselves. Look at their shoulders. And it's cool to work with that and help somebody see that in themselves and empty their backpack.
Has your relationship with your body changed as a result?
Oh, yes. I listen to it whisper now before I waited for it to scream. So I think it's a big thing that I've been really fortunate to work with, volunteering my time with the track team, the boys track and field at the high school, Ocean City High School, the last 12 years. And there's a big mentality in fitness, no pain, no gain. And that's really not true. You can have flaming discomfort in your muscles and get stronger, but pain is to be taken seriously. And there's a lot of injuries going on. It's a very different world for kids in athletics now, especially at the high school level. So my mantra to them every season is, listen to your body whisper so it doesn't scream. And that doesn't mean be a wimp, and that doesn't mean complain about every sensation, but this idea of identifying sensation is a big thing, coming to your senses, kind of closing your eyes, feeling things in your body, listening to your breath, using aromatherapy, coming to your sense of smell. Like, all those things have been really instrumental in helping me guide other people so I can come to my own senses.
Yeah, the importance of turning your focus inward, because I think in our culture, we are so externally focused.
Oh yeah. And it's changed even in the way I teach my classes now, because there was not I did not have a cell phone when I started. It's a big shift.
So yeah. How do you manage a cell phone now, since that is a big external focus?
I have screen time limits on mine. I might come off like I have great self-discipline, but I get sucked into. So I have an app on my phone that shuts all of my other apps down, except for my ability to hear emergencies, and it'll light up and say 15 more minutes or ignore limits for today. And it tells me at the end of the day and at the end of the week how much time I've spent on my phone. And when I first thought, I thought, this can't be right. But it's amazing. One thread leads to another thread, and there's a lot of it's cool information. But how much information do you need? And you stifle creativity if you're just staring at a screen. You almost have to be bored sometimes.
So that's crazy. There's an app to prevent you from looking at apps.
Yes, I have it. It's called screen time. It's limits. It's like the parent that took away your phone or shut down the computer or shut off the TV. I need for me what I had for my children when they watch too much TV. But before I could walk in and shut the TV off, nobody's here to take my phone away.
Yeah, it's a crazy addiction. I mean, it's so wild to see just in 10 years that people are constantly looking down in front of them when they're walking around or just sitting in a waiting room.
Here's where, too, there's a shift going on in the yoga world. And yoga can be a business, too. It's not immune like any other business, which was hard for me to learn in the beginning because I wanted it to be all, everybody's wonderful, all the teachers are enlightened, and it's really, it's like anything else in life. You know, it's human. So one of the things in yoga is there's beautiful traditional schools that are wonderful and they offer a great practice and you have to find the flavor that works for you. I like to say it's a buffet. You have to go find, search around, search teachers, and even within styles, every class can be different based on your teacher. People should shop around. I believe I can learn from teachers who I don't necessarily resonate with, and that's a good gift. But now with the way that we live so differently, when you think about it, there were these skinny dudes in caves throwing their body around just so they could sit for a long period of meditation. That's how it started. We don't do that anymore. So perhaps the flow that we do in our practice maybe should be a little bit shifted to undo the demands of technology that weren't there before. So I know for my classes, and everybody has to find what works for them, I don't teach as many downward dogs as I used to because we're already in forward flexion looking at our phone and computer. I teach
a lot. Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah.
I teach a lot more heart openers in extension because I'm looking at the idea of balance, even in your body. And it feels good to lift your heart and open your arms up wide. In the winter time, I teach a lot of arms way out to the side because when you're freezing cold, you contract. So I try to let my teaching meet the season, meet what I do. And that's been really wonderful, a lesson for me to learn because I've taught corporate yoga at the Press of Atlantic City. I teach yoga there once a week at our local paper. They sit a lot and they're at computers. I'm going to teach them something to undo their day that's different from someone in a standing profession. When I teach teachers, I've even gone into a hair salon and done assessments of people's posture while they stand there. And most people not lock their knees. So what do they need? They need something softer.
That's really smart to use yoga as like an ergonomic treatment.
Yes, and it is. And that's why yoga can be so much more than just, you know, people think breathing and meditation, there's adaptability into all different areas of life. And it doesn't really matter if you call it yoga or movement or Pilates or corrective exercise. I'm not hung up on the label. It's just move and breathe in your body in a way that it moves in all different directions every day.
When you see someone struggling with the postures, or for anybody out there who struggles with feeling self-conscious or feeling like maybe they rule out yoga as an option even before they've tried it because they feel like, I can't do that. What would you tell someone who struggles in that way?
If you think it would be good for you, you've been told by your physician or by your physical therapist or chiropractor or healer that this would be a good thing for you to do, hire somebody for one private lesson, someone that you've researched or somebody that you know somebody else has gone to that is very open and flexible to all different kinds of yoga, that's not stuck in one this way or the highway label, that is focused on meeting you exactly where you're at. And one private lesson can sometimes demystify yoga, or go to a big community event where there's so many other people, nobody's going to look at you, or the teacher might not even see you, sneak in, or come to a class that's billed as a beginner class so you don't have to feel like you're not ahead. I still, when I take classes at other places where I don't know what's going on and I walk into a room and I know everybody knows everybody if I'm traveling, I know what I'm doing and I can feel a little insecure. It's hard. It's very hard to put yourself out there. And most people that are coming into it are coming into it later in life where perhaps their body's not the same as it used to be and they're self-conscious and yeah, they're my people. Your age is not a cage.
How would someone who might happen to be on the Jersey Shore for the summer, for a holiday in the summer, or at any point during the year, how would they find you?
Well, my website is njbeachyoga.com, and the calendar changes all the time. Besides offering group classes that are regularly offered throughout the summer on the beach, I offer classes inside. I go to different places. And I do a lot of privates, and privates can be a small group. I like to structure my fee schedule so that it's accessible to a lot of people. I do a lot of bachelorette yoga, girls weekends that come down and they want to get together and do yoga. And it's, you pay for my time in that kind of setting, because I know it's hard sometimes, and then they split the cost, and that all varies. All that technicality gets worked out, and that's all listed on my website. If you're on a family vacation, I'll come to you on your beach at a time that works for you, and you can practice with your whole family and just have it be all of you. And that's really fun too. So it can kind of be whatever you want it to be.
Beautiful. So your website is the best way. Are you on Facebook too? And
Facebook, Instagram, not a lot of Twitter. Instagram and Facebook. The Facebook page and Instagram are also njbeachyoga.com.
All right. And I'll put all of your links in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
And I really highly recommend, if you find yourself on the Jersey Shore, go check out Terry's yoga class.
Oh, I will tell you, you're amazing the minute you walk on the beach.
She will. She does that. She totally does that.
And I'll really encourage you to tell a stranger that too when you leave.
Well, Terry, you're amazing.
Well, Wendy, you're amazing.
No, you. Hey, so I really appreciate you coming on and talking about your take on yoga, which I think is really cool.
Thanks. I hope it inspires somebody to give it a try and just see what they think.
Yeah, I think I would do it if I was listening.
Oh, and we play, by the way. I believe play is should be a big, huge part of any time you're in a group situation. Sincere, not serious.
I can get behind that, definitely. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Terry.
Thank you. Namaste.
So I was serious. If you find yourself on the Jersey Shore in the summer, you've got to make the trip to Sea Isle and do yoga on the beach with Terry. You'll be glad you did. Thank you for listening. If you're enjoying hanging out with me at the Lucid Cafe, you can make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast on whatever podcast platform you use. All right, we'll see you in 2 weeks for another episode of Lucid Cafe.